But I ended up doing that holotropic breathwork session, and I had friends that were like, it's a powerful experience. And I'm like, you're breathing for a couple hours? Like, okay, I'll go do it. I ended up having more physical release in my body, more emotional release, and more mental clarity than I had had from any body work, any therapy session, any acupuncture, MDR, whatever it was. I had more of a profound moment in that session right then, right there.
Welcome to the Body Forward Podcast. I'm Kenzie Burke, your host. I am devoted to living a life that is full of transformation. Like a snake, shedding layers, coming back home to myself and remembering who I really am. I have found that the answers we are often looking for, the freedom we seek to feel, the creative energy we desire, the confidence we would like to embody is not something outside of us, but within us. Our bodies are full of wisdom, remembrance, liberation, and it is here on this podcast where I share my personal journey and conversations with my mentors, friends, and others who are aspirational in living a life full of transformation. In this episode, I sit down with Stephen Jagers, who is the founder of Somatic Breathwork. And in this episode, we talk all things breathwork, nervous system. This is such an amazing conversation. If you are curious about breathwork, I know it is all the rage and so many people are talking about it, but Stephen is such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to this subject, and I learned a lot. I think you will too. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. It's just so amazing to me how we hold these powerful modalities inside of us, the breath, the thing that we need to do each and every day. And we do it whether we're thinking about it or not is what is keeps us alive and keeps us here. And really learning the tools that we can utilize to empower ourselves, to heal, to move energy. It's just so powerful that we have this within us. And so on this episode, Stephen dives deep into the power of breath work and a lot of nervous system talk too, which has been very relevant in my life as I've been rewiring my own nervous system. So I think you will enjoy this conversation. And then without further ado, I'll let you jump right in. Okay, well, I'd love to jump in by starting with you introducing yourself in whatever way you feel called. I know it's a broad question, but what's on your heart?
Oh, man. This is a tough question. And, you know, I guess right now I would introduce myself by saying that I'm actually a verb. I'm a process. I'm a change. And I've had many different roles and many different labels and titles. And I'd say I'm probably in a transitional phase in my life right now.
Yeah, I feel that deeply.
And allowing that, you know. I think for me, I go through phases of like being super sure and all the things that I'm doing and, you know, everything's clear and it's like just put in the work towards this thing. And then you do that for a while and then you get to the point where it's like, okay, now it's time to transition and into something else. And there's that in-between time where it's like, you're not sure. And those can be, I've watched other people, I've watched myself have a really hard time in these transitional phases where we can put so much pressure on ourselves to try to figure it out, right? Everyone wants to have their life figured out. But what's helped me in the transitional phases is to realize that it's a figuring process and you're shaping it as you go, and to just protect your space for exploration and curiosity. Just go test as many things as you possibly can, as many things spark your interest and if you continue to do that, something will speak to you and it'll be like, all right, now it's time to go all in on this. And then you'll have to go through another transitional phase and it will continue to repeat the cycle.
I love that you opened with that because I'm so in that transitional phase and I just want the answer.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm really fighting it every day because I want the answer and I know the answer is in the allowing. And I feel like there's got to be so many of us that are in this big transition. And from the outside, you know, I can look at someone like yourself and I'm like, what are you talking about? You seem like you got it all set up. But yeah, it's just such an initiative time in history, I feel, and calling for next levels of self. And I really feel like it's this time is really pushing us all to go in and heal and process and feel. And for me, at least in this process, I'm just like unbecoming all these things I became. So this transition is more so like learning how to be in this body of who I really am.
Yeah. A lot of it's peeling the layers apart to get to the point where you can find the thing that's already there. It's like, I use the metaphor of like right now it's fall in Austin, in my backyard there are just tons of acorns everywhere. And look at that. That acorn already knows that it's about to be an oak tree. And it like inside of it, it already knows. And I think a lot of us, we deal with so much societal and parental and cultural impressions that get pressed upon us that tell us what to do with our life. And the work right now that I see most people having to do, including myself, is this, I call it like a remembering process. And even I love words. To break down that word, to remember is to remember yourself, which is to put all the pieces back together that are already there and strip away all that's not actually you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that hits so deeply. Yeah. What has sparked this process for you? As in, maybe we'll backtrack a little bit about what you've built so far.
Yeah.
And what that looks like, and then how that's now leading into what feels like a transition for you.
It's been a journey.
Yeah.
It's been a journey. I'll give a little bit of background on myself. So I grew up only child. Parents were significant addicts, really struggling with addiction to really hard drugs, meth, cocaine, alcohol, all the things. And, I watched them really struggle. And as a child, we can talk about the nervous system, but we learn how to co-regulate first before we learn self-regulation. We are connected to our parents and we're picking up and we're feeling everything that they're feeling before we individuate and become our own person and learn how to self-regulate ourselves. So I think as a child, you are so sensitive and you pick up on everything. And I could feel that something was off with them. And, they ended up moving to Arizona and going to rehab and, changing their life and really doing the absolute best that they possibly could. And I watched them switch to, prescription medications and, this Western world of pharmaceutical fix-it mentality, basically covering up symptoms. But I watched them really struggle internally, anxiety, depression, and I could feel it all. So sensitive. And through that process, like I was always very physically active. I played so many sports. I also loved music. And, those were two things that I didn't really realize. But when you are, physically active outside running in the streets or playing basketball, or I was an amateur skateboarder for a while. And I also played music. When you're doing those sorts of things, you're in a state of flow. And you're not really thinking about what's going on at home. You're not thinking about the future, the past. You're like fully absorbed by the moment. And, outside of that, I was so fascinated by the mind and addiction specifically. I started studying addiction psychology in college. And I also, part of me wanted to go down like a physical therapy route because I was fascinated by the body. And I had a lot of issues in my own body from skateboarding and sports and injuries. And at that time, I was in college, and I had a hard time with traditional school. I definitely had a rebel spirit. And so I ended up dropping out. And I went kind of on a little bit of a soul-searching journey, but I'm not going to go too far into that. I ended up finding a holistic school that taught nutrition, body work, lots of different forms of body work from Western, like postural, structural rehabilitation, neuromuscular therapy, to somatic understanding of how emotions are stored in the body. And, as soon as I walked into the school and as soon as I put my hands on somebody, it all of the stuff that I was learning, it actually made sense to me because it made sensation. Like I could feel it. And I'm such a kinesthetic learner and an experiential learner that I think most people are as well. Not all of us are good at like reading books and then writing stuff down and putting it back.
I never out. Was. That was not my journey.
Right. I got so lucky and I fell in love with it. I ended up studying just the human body and body work and from a structural standpoint, an emotional standpoint, and an energetic standpoint. And my goal at that time was to try to see how they were all connected and kind of bridge the gap between, you know, some of these Eastern modalities that have been around for so long, and also understand the Western understanding of our nervous system and our posture and, you know, the fascial systems of the body. And, you know, I just nerded out on that stuff for a long time. And I fell in love with it so much. I became an instructor at that school. They were like, you know, I was an assistant instructor. I was like 23.
Cool.
I was young.
Yeah.
And I remember people, you know, there were a lot of people that were going to school there that were like, what are you doing? Like, how old are you?
Did you just know also as a child that you wanted to take a different path than your parents?
Absolutely.
You had an awareness.
Absolutely. Like I saw, and they truly gave me so many gifts. One of the biggest gifts that they gave me was that they didn't, and I work with so many people that have so much trauma from a lot of this stuff, like telling you exactly what you need to do with your life. You need to go to school to be a doctor or a lawyer, or you need to like study this religion and you have to stay in this religion. Like they never put a lot of those pressures on me where I had enough space to try to kind of figure it out myself. And what they did tell me is that, you know, they gave me so much love and so much support. They told me, you know, you can do anything that you want to do. Just don't do what we did. Mm. And so it gave me a lot of space to kind of figure things out. And I wasn't forced to like go down a specific route. So it wasn't, you know, it took me a while to realize that because I had a lot of anger and a lot of stuff built up inside of me. But it was truly a gift. But yeah, I was an assistant instructor. My teachers, like, just because I was so committed and I wanted to learn it, they were like, you know your shit, like, be my assistant, right? And so I worked for like nothing for a while and was an assistant teacher. And then eventually my teachers, like a couple of my teachers left and the administration was like, okay, you know this stuff, like you can teach. And I was teaching a classroom of 30 people, anatomy and physiology and kinesiology. And
oh, wow.
A lot of science classes that, and my assistant instructor ended up having a degree from the university in this stuff, but I learned how to hold a classroom, how to take information and put it into an applied way, like how to actually apply it in a real physical way. And, you know, I did that for a while, and then, you know, you don't really make a lot of money as a teacher, and it was kind of a struggle. And I think I was like 26 or 27 and I wanted to go explore. I went and lived in Hawaii. I lived in Oregon. I just kind of traveled for a little bit.
Were you working?
I was kind of living a little bit of a transient bum style life, just exploring. You know, I actually worked on a cannabis farm in Oregon just to get out in the redwood forest and explore the hot springs, and, you know, made a little bit of money like trimming cannabis. And then I went to Hawaii. I had a friend that was working on a coffee macadamia nut farm and went out there and just kind of did that. You don't really need a lot of money when you're living that sort of lifestyle and swimming with dolphins every day. And then I for a moment there, I had so much, I started getting anxiety actually, which was so interesting. I'd never had it before. My parents talked about it, but I had never really felt it. And I think it's because my life was so chill in Hawaii. Like I was eating fresh fruit and, you know, like living in community and everything was like ideal. But there was like a driving force inside of me that knew I wanted to do something greater with my life. Yeah. And I ended up deciding to come back. And yeah, I went down a route of diving into like psychedelics. I worked for a nonprofit organization called MAPS for a little bit. I volunteered for them. I worked the site. I remember working the psychedelic science conference in 2017, and I went to a holotropic breathwork session by a man named Stan Grof, who is probably the modern, like, he's the father of a lot of these modern breathwork practices that a lot of people are doing. And I had so much release inside of my body emotionally.
Was this on psychedelics as well?
Not on psychedelics. Okay. No. He created holotropic breathwork because he was a psychologist in like the 60s that was using LSD with his patients and was seeing the profound effects of taking people into an altered state of consciousness while utilizing like psychotherapy and other stuff. But they ended up criminalizing that. And so we wanted to figure out how to take people into this altered state of consciousness without using psychedelics. And me, as I was exploring psychedelics a lot during that time, and I really wanted to understand the real world application for it in a safe way, I thought I was going to go down that route. I was like, maybe I'll come to school, or maybe I'll go back to school and become a psychedelic psychotherapist, because it was helping me in a lot of ways. But I ended up doing that holotropic breathwork session, and I had friends that were like, it's a powerful experience. And I'm like, you're breathing for a couple hours? Like, okay, I'll go do it. I ended up having more physical release in my body, more emotional release, and more mental clarity than I had had from any body work, any therapy session, any acupuncture, EMDR, whatever it was. I had more of a profound moment in that session right then, right there. And what happened is I was going into it and I had a physical pop in my thoracic spine. And when I was like 18, I remember going to the doctor with some back pain. He said, you have some scoliosis in your thoracic spine. And I was like, all right, fuck, I'll figure it out. But during that session, I felt a pop like right in that area. And as soon as I felt that physical pop, because, you know, you're expanding your diaphragm actually, which is the musculature underneath your rib cage that you actually breathe with. Mm-hmm. It's connected to your lumbar spine. And I felt this pop in my spine from literally breathing back and forth. And then all of a sudden I was flooded with just so much anger.
Yeah.
It just came up, angry at my parents for the ways in which they didn't show up, and, you know, all the stories in my head about how they were shitty parents. And then, you know, it quickly, after that anger flooded through me, it quickly went to like sadness for just them and them doing the best that they could. And, you know, really actually just trying to give me the best possible life, and sadness around how much pressure I actually put on them, and they're actual humans that didn't have the information that we have nowadays. And they, you know, the trauma that they went through and the stuff that they were going through was probably passed down to them. And so,
yeah, and it's passed down to you. And
so it's just continued past the lineage. And after that, after I had this sort of just clearing and releasing of emotions, I had such a profound moment of clarity. I saw it so clearly. I realized that I was a breath worker first and a body worker second. Mm. And I had studied a lot of like respiration anatomy and all the different functions of it. But I really thought about it and I'm like, well, I'm actually attuning to someone's breath when I'm working with them, whether I'm teaching, whether I'm coaching, whatever you're doing, if you are working with another human, you are a breath worker, because your breath is the thing that's controlling your nervous system. And your nervous system is the electrical system of your body. It's the energy system that all these Eastern modalities utilize, you know, the TCM, the meridian lines, all those things. It's all your nervous system, which is the chakra system, nerve system. And if someone is holding their breath, or they're not breathing, or they're stuck in a fight or flight state, well, then their system is not open. They're in a defensive state, and whatever you're trying to do with them is not landing. Mm-hmm. And so I started to like sit with that realization. Okay, let me start.
And this is all from this one profound session. This is all coming through.
This is all from one session.
Yeah, this is like a psychedelic experience.
It was, you know, you have those moments in your life where, you know, you have years of work that, you know, you look back like a few years later and you're like, wow, okay, I really see change in my life, you know, from continuous work. And sometimes you have just moments in time where it's just like everything shifts right then and there. And it doesn't require any integration, doesn't require any follow-up. It's like a profound change right away.
And because you're ready. I think that also is a testament to leading up to those moments.
Yeah. And so I started studying a lot of different breath works. And
so from there you were like,
from there I was like, breath. Okay, I want to understand breath work at a deeper level and combined it with a lot of the body work stuff that I was had already done and the somatic stuff that I had already been doing. And yeah, I started studying all of it and started incorporating breath work into my sessions with people. And, you know, I had quite a few clients that were also body workers and therapists. I worked with a lot of practitioners. And I had this one woman ask me, she was like, can you teach me what you do? And I was like, the light bulb went off and I was like, I was an instructor at one point. I knew how to make a lesson plan. I knew how to make a curriculum. I spent 2 months just like creating this workbook and I held a little training. I texted like 5 people and was like, hey, would you want to learn like a synopsis of kind of how I work with people? And a lot of them were clients, and I held a little training out of my house for 5 people. And I did that for, probably three rounds of that. And then, you know, I started, more people were talking about it and more people wanted to learn. And then it just started.
And so teaching people how to teach people how to do this.
Teaching people how to utilize the technique that I kind of use with people, which is, it's not just breath work. It's a combination of breath work, body work, and also like guided verbal cueing. And there's so much more inside of that.
Is this a very activating breath?
So I could go over it.
Yeah, go over it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go over it in a moment. It's so I basically, from there it turned into, you know, people wanting it online, and then I tried to figure out how to apply this online. And you know, it's been 3 years now since I started that. And now we have over 1,000 practitioners that have gone through our training. Globally, we're in like 30 something different countries, people doing sessions in a multitude of different languages. We just got accredited by a university. And so we're able to offer college level continuing education credits for our training now. Wow. I just got back from holding a training, and it was our first fully accredited training, which is so special. But as far as, you want me to go into the technique?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I do need just a little sip real
quick. Yeah, have here. A sip.
So there's a lot of different types of breath work out there, and they are all good for different things. And some people might not say that because there's a lot of dogma in it. You know, like there's a lot of religious style breath works out there from a yogic prediction or from a yogic tradition, such as like Kundalini or Pranayama, that sort of thing. And there's a lot of like performance style breath work that's good for athletic performance and training your resilience and your blood oxygen level. And a lot of them have different thoughts on what's right. And so I, during the time of studying all the different breath works, I found that there's kind of two categories, main categories, that a lot of these breath works fall into. And some of them are like the activating breath,
yep,
where you're it's considered over breathing, where you're spiking the nervous system. And there's a lot of them that are sort of, I would call it under breathing, where you're trying to train yourself to breathe less and to like really relax the nervous system. And there's benefits to both. So within somatic breathwork, I utilize both. And there's
benefits. I was just going to say, I notice when I'm doing it myself, I almost have to spike it because I don't want to because I have to meet something and feel something I don't want to feel. But then on the other side of it, then I can bring it down and regulate. Because otherwise I feel like if I'm just doing, I just want to sit and do the calm breath, that's going to put me to sleep. But that's not going to get me to my edge.
Exactly. Exactly. And that, it follows the understanding of what nervous system regulation actually is. A lot of people think that when you are regulating your nervous system or you have a regulated nervous system, that means that you're in a state of calm all the time, right? If you're regulated, like you're this peaceful monk, but that's not what a regulated nervous system means. A regulated nervous system means that you can maintain your state of choice, meaning that I can turn my system on and I can activate it. I can have passion. I can have drive. I can go do physical things if I want to. And I know how to turn my system on fully, and then I know how to turn it off as well. So it's not just like going into a relaxed state, but it's also having the ability to turn it on fully. And so I had a mentor of mine say once, health is the ability to choose. It's for you to have choice. And breath, your respiration, is one of the only body rhythms that you do both consciously and unconsciously, meaning that you don't have to choose. You're going to, like, we're doing this podcast, we're going to continue breathing. We're not thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Or we could right now, like, actually consciously choose and take in a breath together. And so it is the thing that can, you can have choice over your system and your state, and the state of your nervous system, which we're actually not taught from a young age. You can actually control your nervous system, and we're not dictated by our outside circumstances. We can't control the external world, but you can always control your internal world. And breath is one way that you can do that. And there's obviously, it's connected to your nervous system, and your nervous system is the bridge between your mind and your body. So I'll go back to that. The benefits of spiking your nervous system, and a lot of people don't understand this, is that when you are breathing heavily for an extended period of time, you are mimicking a stress state. Like, you're mimicking a stress.
And so is that why you will have your traumas, your junk,
that's why,
your emotions
that is why
come
emotions
up.
Start to come up. Right. Yeah. So in a safe container, specifically with a practitioner, is where I've found it to be the most powerful, because most of our healing happens, or most of our wounding happened from another person, our parents, our partner, or whatever it was. Most of our healing requires another person, because it's the trauma stuck in our body, but it's not activated unless another person's around. It's relational. That's why when we're by ourselves, we can feel just absolutely enlightened, and then you can get in a relationship and all your triggers come up.
Right? Yeah.
Because it's the trauma response, the defense system is in relation. And so having someone there, and, you know, one of my favorite quotes in The Body Keeps the Score is, you know, healing happens in the presence of an empathetic witness.
Yeah. And yeah. And I think someone that can also usher it. I find myself when I'm working with my teachers and stuff, there's moments where they're like, you got to breathe, because I trained myself to be so strong that I can just swallow.
Yeah.
And just getting that cue of like, they can see when I'm holding, and that's my natural state. Yeah. And, you know, just hearing that cue of like, you got to take a deep breath, and then it just, I go into it.
Yeah. There's a multiple, and that's my specialty, is probably like seeing and sensing all the minute details and energy fluctuation in someone's system and how to work with that. But as far as the breath goes, like the spiking of your nervous system, when you're breathing heavily for an extended period of time, you are mimicking a state of distress, which in a safe container, and someone doesn't have to go back into therapy and like relive all of the memories, but we can mimic the actual physical state of stress. And what happens is you're giving your organism, your biology, an opportunity to release or to complete whatever necessary action that your body probably needed to do in the moment of whatever stressor happened, but you didn't actually give yourself the opportunity to do that, because most of us have been told to sit down, shut up, and suck it up and be tough our whole life. So if something happens, we're just, I'm good, right? And most time we're holding it together for our friends and our family and the people we love. So that's what happens is when you're spiking the nervous system, if you have a practitioner that is trained, that knows how to hold that for you, or if you, you know, obviously a resource yourself, it can provide that sort of emotional release, or maybe it's just physical. Maybe it's just your body completing whatever necessary action it needed to do. Maybe it needed to throw a temper tantrum, or maybe right. it needed to like shake, or whatever it is. It could be physical, like a physical movement. It could be a movement of emotion. And then also sometimes like after that, the like memories and stuff might come up as well, but
It helps complete it. Yes, I'm exactly. learning that. I'm in a somatic course right now, and yeah. it said he was saying that trauma is something that did not get to happen. And so you have yeah. to go complete the action mm-hmm. that what was missing. That's yeah. the question, what was missing. And it's I'm just putting so much together because, yes, you yeah. have to go relive it, re-feel it.
Yeah.
And that would plays a role in regulating your nervous system, correct?
Because it's considered a discharge.
Mm-hmm.
So emotion, physical movement, all these things are energy in motion through your system. They're an expression. And if we suppressed or repressed, or maybe we're even depressed, all of that pressure that's been stored in our body, if it hasn't had an opportunity to express, well, that release of the emotion or the necessary action that your physical body needed to do, that's a sign to your nervous system that you're not in the presence of a stressor anymore. And so if you watch animals, like something happens to them, they immediately start shaking. They have deep belly breaths, and or you watch children, something happens to them, they immediately start throwing a temper tantrum or, you know, having an emotional release because they're so much more connected to the innate intelligence of their body, and their body and their being knows that if I don't move this through me, then I'm going to continue to stay stuck in that state. And you know, animals understand this. And if an animal didn't actually have that discharge, well, it would stay stuck in this fight or flight state. And then how long is it actually going to survive out in the world? And so you have so many people in the world.
And then freeze. Does freeze come after fight or flight?
Freeze is, it's not that they come in order. It's right. whatever defense system that you're, because they're all intelligent responses. So there's fight, flight, okay. freeze, and fawn. These are all defense systems, and they've been curated and developed through thousands of years of evolutionary biology. Like your nervous system, however old you are, whatever your chronological age is, you are actually not that age. You are actually very old. I'm sorry to tell you that.
I don't feel my age.
You are ancient.
I feel so ancient.
You're ancient. Because it's taken thousands and thousands of years for your nervous system to develop these very intelligent patterns that have kept you safe and kept you alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, fight is something's happening. I'm going to move towards it. You know, flight is I'm going to, you know, run away from it, move back. And freeze is, well, I'm just going to basically play dead or numb myself from feeling the pain of being eaten alive in a way.
Right.
And well, fawn is another one that's sort of a newer defense system that's specific in mammals. It's, you know, I'm going to kind of chameleon or become the thing that I think that you want me to be so that you don't hurt me.
Hmm.
It's another defense system. But so those defense systems are intelligent. They're so intelligent and they protect us in the moment. And, you know, whether you could say on a biological level that it's protecting you from, you know, feeling the pain of being eaten alive or feeling whatever's going on, or you could say like on a spiritual level, for me, it is, you know, your soul is protecting you from actually feeling the pain of what's going on. It's protecting you in the moment from feeling.
Yeah.
But that part of you that gets cut off from feeling yourself doesn't just come back right away. Unless we actually are in touch with our innate processes of how we release the defense system. So we've weeded out the innate processes of releasing defense systems in our society. And that releasing of the defense systems is through singing, dancing, crying, yelling, screaming, laughing, running around a fire all together in ceremony, doing whatever our body needs to do.
Yeah, getting back to our animal state.
Getting back to this biological state, our animalistic state, right? And so why do I think that this modality is getting growing so popular? It's that people, there's so many people out in the world that are, have cognitively, they live in their head, they've cognitively processed all the things that have happened to them and they feel good as far as the story goes, but their body still feels like it's in the presence of a tiger. Like they're walking around with a tiger next to them the whole time. And the body is still stuck in a contracted state. And I, you know, I have so many people that come to me that are just like, I can't stop this anxiety, or I can't stop this, these troubling thoughts or limited thinking, or I really want to think bigger. And I can't stop this scarcity, right? And people don't choose to wake up in the morning and to think from a scarcity place. That the thoughts are based off of the state of your nervous system. So if your body is in a contracted state, if you are in pain, if someone just hurt you, if you are wounded on an emotional or a physical level, it's going to be very hard to think clearly. Someone just broke your heart, you're going to be muddied by the emotions that are moving through you. If you're, you know, if, and the institutions that have kind of run the world for a while, governments, religions, all these things, they understand that if I can keep you in a state scared, of fear,
yep,
guilt, shame, well, you're not going to be able to think for yourself.
Yep.
You're not going to be able to think for yourself. And so like a modality such as yoga understands this, that your body is your nervous system, and that nervous system is an antenna, and the state of that antenna is going to be what you are actually tuning into and picking up on from a mental level. And we haven't really been able to figure out where is the mind in your, is it in your head? Is it outside of your head? Is it in between us? Do we have a collective mind? And so the state of your antenna will be what you're actually picking up. And if you want to, you know, expand, like have an expanded consciousness, well, you actually need to feel safe and expanded in your body first.
And then what would you say about patterns, right? Because waking up and feeling anxious, right? That becomes a pattern, right? Mm-hmm. That becomes someone's state, that every day I wake up and I feel this way. Mm-hmm. What is that process to truly breaking that pattern from this viewpoint?
There's an interesting understanding called reenactment. Peter Levine talks about this.
Yeah.
Reenactment is that basically your being from a biological level will continue to call in certain scenarios so that you can complete whatever necessary action your body needs to do. Like it's an impulse. And so maybe you have like, I'll back up. All of life is striving for two things. It's striving for growth and it's striving for homeostasis. My body is striving for balance and also growth. All of these trees outside, everything is striving for those two things. And so when you have defense systems that are activated, or you could say patterns in your life that are blocking you, that maybe, and I would guarantee maybe at some point that pattern helped you, mm-hmm. but if left activated, it becomes the thing that blocks you later on. Like for me, when I was a child, I learned how to develop this massive wall where when my parents were dysregulated, I would just bring all my energy back in and it would protect me from feeling all of their stuff. It was the most intelligent thing. Now I'm dealing with that same pattern that has protected me is becoming the thing that's blocking me in other areas of my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, but it's reenactment is the understanding that we will repeat it until we complete it. Because your body wants, your being wants to grow. It wants to discharge. It wants to release. And maybe, you know, I use the example of, we all know the people, and maybe it's been yourself or it's definitely been me, where we continue to go from relationship to relationship, where it's like, it's maybe it's a toxic relationship and it's, it's a different person each time, but it's the same person and the same patterns. And we will continue to repeat that pattern until we find a new adaptive response or a new way to overcome it. And maybe that new adaptive response is learning how to just say no. And so it's taking a look at your patterns and understanding that this pattern probably at some point in your life was the thing that helped you so much. Mm-hmm. Was the thing that protected you.
Yeah. Mine's money. So it was like the drive, the run, the fight.
Yeah. And probably now it's maybe blocking you. And I wouldn't say that it's money. I would probably say it's the relationship to it. Maybe it's,
and it's to intimacy too, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. So are the patterns that we have that are like, you know, for anybody that's listening to you, think of whatever patterns that are blocking you right now in your life, whatever patterns you're doing. And I guarantee if you go back far enough in your life, at some point that pattern was actually a superpower. A pattern probably was the thing that helped you so much. And it's gotten you to the point where you're at today, but now your body doesn't need it anymore, or you're being, or now it's become the thing that's blocking you. And so what your being is craving is a new adaptive response, a new growth. And so like I have a different perspective on trauma and stress specifically, because it's the number one thing that weakens us. And you look at stress specifically, and stress and trauma, they aren't the things that are happening to you. They're the response inside of your body to whatever's happening to you. And it's different between me and you. Mm-hmm. Like what's stressful to me might not be stressful to you because you have a level of resilience or whatever patterns you've used or or maybe whatever patterns were passed down from your ancestry as well. Right. But, you know, trauma, stress, those things are the thing that weaken our system to the point where we can't fight things off. Our immune system's compromised. We start to lose connection to ourselves and what's right for us. We stop feeling ourselves. We become, as Peter Levine said, this sort of living death where we're alive and we're walking around, but we're actually not alive. It's the death with your eyes open disease, right? We're not feeling. And so trauma and stress, it's the thing that's weakening your system, but it's also the thing that causes growth. And I look at it as something like that happens to you. It's a question to your being. And what it's asking you is, how do I grow from this? What's the new adaptive response? What's the new way of being that I overcome this?
So it's a call.
It's a call.
Rise, really.
It's a call. Yeah. It's like lifting weights, you could say. You're actually stressing your system. You're putting a barbell on your back or where, however you're doing it, and you are tearing your musculature. And there's obviously a certain amount of it that you need, and there's a multitude of different things within that, but can you actually lift it? Can you recover from it? Because too much of it can hurt and really damage your system. But finding the actual right alignment and the right posture and the right breathing and all those things will allow you to actually overcome it. And now you've actually grown that new adaptive pattern inside of yourself. And I look at this on an individual level, and I also look at this from a collective level. Like right now, you could look at COVID. That was a collective trauma. That's a question to our humanity.
Yeah, and what do you see in the rise right now? I mean, I'm sure you experiencing what you've experienced in your business.
Yeah.
There is a rise to process traumas right now and to make new patterns.
I'll get to that.
Okay.
I'll get to that, yeah. No, that's a really good question, but... Now, collectively, we have this question being asked to our collective, and it's really asking what's the new adaptive response? And the question answered is growth. We'll grow from it. The question unanswered starts to create symptoms. You go through something in your life, you find a new adaptive response, you grow from it, or you don't, you'll start to experience symptoms, anxiety. And symptoms are usually a suppression of things that the body naturally wants to express stuff. like emotions.
So it starts showing in other places.
It starts showing in other places because it wants to move through you.
Yeah. Dis-ease.
Yeah. It's a dis-ease of energy flowing through your system.
Yep.
Because we're expression vessels and our body wants to move things through us in some sort of way. It wants to find new ways of expressing. We want to find our own unique expression in the world, right? But to answer your question is, it's been so interesting, and it continues to unfold as I go.
Oh, it's continuing. it's really continuing. It's the journey that is very present.
Yeah. And it starts to make...
It's not a 2020 thing.
No. It actually... Hindsight's 2020, and like it, my life has started to make more sense as I've gone. I've just continued and listened from that place. But, you know, I look back and... when I first started the breath work side of things, you know, before that it was, you know, 7 or 8 years in somatics and body work. But at that time there was fires all over the place, like in Northern California and Australia and the Amazon, all over the place. And it was like, holy shit, the world is burning. The lungs of the planet are burning. And then we have COVID that happens, which is this respiratory virus that's putting people on these respirators and attacking people's ability to breathe.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And then we had the whole racial thing that went down where the man, like right a couple months after, where he's being choked, yelling, what, I can't breathe.
Yeah.
And then we have people are forced to wear masks.
Can't breathe.
Where he can't breathe. Yeah. And so, and I love etymology because you look at the word respiration. To respire means to re-spirit or to re-spiral. Mm-hmm. Every time you take a breath, the Eastern modalities or the Eastern thoughts understand this. Breath is your life force, chi, prana. Every time you take a breath, you are pumping spirit, life force, energy back into your body so that you can show up right here, right now as the fully aligned version of whatever spirit or soul, you know, incarnation that you believe in. But now, I had someone ask me the other day, do I believe that there's kind of like a spiritual war going on? And it took me a moment to really like tune into that. But what I see that's happening is there's actually a war going on against our body.
Ooh, I feel that deeply.
It's a war going on against our body. It's not some sort of spiritual thing. I mean, it is, but we know our spirit, our soul through our body. Every spiritual experience you have, every out of body experience
you feel, yeah,
you've had has been because you have a body. Every experience of love, every experience of pain, every experience of pleasure, joy, sadness, all of these things have been through your body. And if you look at the current world of marketing, like predatory marketing, specifically with women, makeup, breast implants, men, all these things saying that you need to look a certain way. You
even know, medicine.
Like medicine, all the toxins in our food and our
products.
Everything, all the products, right? Everything you look around, it's a war against our body.
Yeah.
And why is that? Because our body is where, if we have a clear body, then we're able to listen so much deeper to our own internal knowing. And, you know, I'm in this work of a lot of people think or look from the outside that a lot of it's emotional release and a lot of it's, but it's never about the release. It's never about like, the emotional release is powerful and it sends a signal to your nervous system that you're like, you're not in the presence of danger and you're actually safe. But what happens after that is you actually start to become clear because you're not in a state of fight or flight. And when you're become clear, you're actually more connected to yourself. And when you're connected to yourself, you can actually become connected to other people. And when you can connect to other people, you can create community. And what I see is it's about the integration. From a somatic perspective, integration just means healing. When you are healing, what's happening is you are integrating. You're going through an internal integration process of connecting to all of the parts of yourself that you've disconnected from. The parts you don't like about yourself, all the shadows, all the emotions that you've pushed down. When you connect to that, you start to connect to all the things that are your strengths, your powers, mm-hmm. the things you're good at, the things you're afraid of, actually, because it comes with a massive amount of responsibility. Mm-hmm. But that integration process is the reconnection, the remembering, putting back together of all of the parts of you that are already there. And when you do that, you can actually, because it's an internal integration of you connecting to all the parts of yourself. And from that place, you can actually connect to other people. And I ask myself frequently, it's like, why do we do this work to begin with? And it's all about relationships. It's all about relating. So that's what life is. Life is all about relationships. When you're at the end of your life, on your deathbed, it's not going to be what you have, what you've created. It's about going to be the quality of relationships that mm-hmm. you've maintained and how many people that you've actually like cultivated powerful relationships with. And if we're not, most of us are not connected to ourselves, and therefore all of the relationships that we're in, they're actually not real relationships. They are
mirrors.
It's a representative of us in those relationships. Yep. And it takes a tremendous amount of energy from your nervous system and your body to hold up a disconnected version of yourself. And then you wonder why so many people have anxiety and depression and are so burnt out, because they're holding up a version of themselves that are actually not connected and not listening to what's going on inside, because we're so muddied by unprocessed emotions, physical issues, all the societal impressions that have been pressed upon you that stop your own unique expression. And so,
there's so much flowing through me, but one, it's like the most radical thing you could do right now is connect to your body and to your breath in this state of the world. And there are a lot of people who are aware of that. And that's why, you know, this work is becoming, there's like this call. I mean, I've had it. I know a lot of people now that I'm connecting to my body who I've been attracting.
Yeah.
It's just so different than the relationships I was having before, but there is just this call, you know, to really get clear, to really connect in so that we can connect. And that I think is the path forward. And it's not an easy process, you know, because it's just a lot of death too. And a lot of, just death.
That's one of the big things in our culture, I think, is the birth process and the death process. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't look at those. We don't look at it as a cyclical process, right? When someone dies, we're like, oh my God, don't leave us. Like, it's actually, they're completing this cycle. And, you know, I remember in physiology, my instructor was incredible, but she says, you know what cancer is? Cancer are cells, are cells that have lost the connection to the geometric code inside of that cell, and that they actually don't die. Cancer is a cell that won't die, because death is one of the most natural things possible.
Right.
And, you know, when something metastasizes, they're rogue cells that continue to repopulate that aren't dying. It's a natural process for your cells to die. You look at the birth and death process, we don't take care of a lot of our elders, have been duped out of what is actual true wisdom, and don't have a lot of stuff to pass down to our, you know, the youth as well. The birth process is incredibly traumatic. We don't look at that as like the most incredible thing that we're bringing people into the world. And, you know, we immediately like take them away from the mom.
Oh yeah. That's I have chills when you say that. Cause that just the whole birth process, that's the most sacred thing in the world.
Yeah. For a male, you know, it's like you're born into the world, and then it's like, oh, hi. And then we're just going to chop your genitals.
Chippity chop.
Like, welcome to life. There's the most sensitive tissue.
Spend the rest of your life trying to heal from this.
Right. You wonder why there's so many insensitive dickheads walking around.
Yeah.
I had to say that.
No, it's true. It's you know, life is so sacred, and it's so beautiful in so many ways. And we have to, which we are, but get back to just the sacredness of it. And the animal, like just we're living beings, and we're supposed to birth life and create and eat and connect, and Yeah, it's gotten so complicated. You know, now a lot of us are doing all this work to get back to the simple truth and our innate nature.
Yeah.
And the death, for me at least, like the death is just all these things that I thought I was, or all these coping mechanisms I had, or all these things that I thought were it, right? Weren't. And so it's like all these patterns that I created to protect myself to get to, I'm at a place right now where it's like all that is dying. Yeah. And it's not available. And so you're just like standing in this whole new body, really, which is my true body. But it's like, there's no looking back.
Yeah.
Because when I look back, I'm like, oh, it's not available anymore.
We only have so much capacity.
Yeah.
We only have so much time on this planet.
Yeah.
We only have so many moments in time that we get to experience this physical form. And your life is measured by breath. Okay? Mm. When you took your first, and eventually we will all take our last, and everything in between, we get to decide what we do with that space.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of parts of ourselves have to die, have to be released to create space for what we actually want. And that's why it's not necessarily about the death. It's not necessarily about the release of the emotions. It's about the space that's created for you to tap into what you actually want, not what everyone has told you what you want, parents, society, marketing, all these things. It's like, what's important to you? And we can't hear that if we have all these things. Mm-hmm. And so I look at that death process as creating space for what's true, what's truly me.
Mm. Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And through that, like, I look at what I'm doing is helping reconnect the mind back to their body. We become such a mentally dominant culture. And
right, because it's like, where's the answer? I want to know in my head. I want the plan. I want
We have to reintegrate. It's the integration of ourselves so that we can integrate with each other. And what happens is that the same disconnect from our mind to our body is the same disconnect that we have to nature. It's the same disconnect that we have to other people on the planet. Like, every cell in your body knows that it's intrinsically connected to all living things. Every cell in your body knows that if you were to go and dump toxins in a river hundreds of miles away from you, that eventually that water would make up the water in the body of your children, eventually. And so this dissociation that we have from each other, like right now, is the first time in a long time that we can actually pull out our phones and we can look at what's going on across the world. And we're kind of trained to dissociate in a way. Mm-hmm. We're look at it and like, oh my God, this is terrible. And every cell in your body knows that we're connected. And right, and a lot of us feel like we're carrying the weight of the world. But in the moment, we're like, is there anything that I can do right now? Oftentimes, there's not a lot of things that you can do right in the moment, but your body still feels it. And so there is this sort of dissociation that your nervous system is designed to pick up on what's happening right in front of you. But we're being shown how connected we are. Like, this is truly a new time that we're going through, and we're going through uncharted territories, and we're being asked a lot, our bodies are being asked a lot of questions, like, how do we grow from this?
Yeah.
And it really is the reintegration and the reconnection of us all, and realizing that we are co-creating, but from that place, it requires us to realize that we are co-creating inside.
Mm. So can we do the breath?
You want to do breath?
Yeah, I want to know what the breath is.
Well, like most of the time, the full breath work session is around an hour long.
No, just the modality.
Yeah.
Overhead.
So the first half, so you can apply this concept to any length of time.
Okay.
And so if you want to do a longer session, though, I highly recommend having someone else guide you.
Yeah.
But how about I just tell you kind of the daily practice that you can do for yourself?
Yes.
So it's basically going to be two rounds. The first round, we're going to spike our nervous system. You want to use circular connected breathing in and out through your mouth. Now, mouth breathing is not necessarily the best thing for your system to do all the time. You should be breathing through your nose all the time, because when you breathe through your nose, you're keeping yourself in a relaxed state. But we can utilize it to spike our system. So, and it really doesn't matter. You can do mouth, nose, whatever, but for the purpose of spiking our nervous system, you can utilize mouth breathing and you will get more in and out quicker. So, and it's not about how fast you go, it's about how deep you can pull it. Most of us aren't occupying like our full breath. We can't pull it all the way down. And it's not just belly breathing. Most people have heard of belly breathing, but it's actually being able to breathe into your sides and also into your low back. For me, I have the visual of expanding in 360 degrees. So it's pulling the breath down as deep as you can, expanding in 360 degrees.
You can breathe for so long too when you do that.
When you do that, you can. Yeah. So, you know, the morning practice I teach is about 30 breaths, or you could say 1 to 2 minutes of like, you know, spiking your nervous system in and out through the mouth, circular breathing, expanding 360 degrees. With the emphasis and kind of the mental awareness on like, let's just clear my energy for the day. What am I holding in my body or in my mind that I don't want to take into my day? And so maybe there's a little bit of a sound that comes out on the exhale. Maybe there's a little bit of like movement in the body, unwinding, that wants to happen during that. And so just the emphasis of kind of clearing, releasing whatever I don't want to take into my day. Then I'll do one breath hold in between. And that breath hold is kind of that still point in between. So I'll take a breath in, I will hold it. And at that point in time, I'm really just tuning into my like spine, my antenna, and I'm connecting to like, how do I want to show up for my day? What do I want to embody? Like, what do I want my antenna to be tuning into? Because we're a vessel for something, right? So what am I going to be tuning into? And then I'll go for the second round. And during that round, I'll switch to the nose. I'll start to elongate my exhale and start to relax, like breathe in how I want to show up and how I want to feel for my day. If you're familiar with like Joe Dispenza's work, firing and wiring elevated emotions in your system has such a profound physiological effect on your body. So breathing in the felt sensation of how I want to show up. What do I want other people to feel from me? While taking my system into a relaxed state, focusing on my exhales. And I'll do that first. It'll be like 3 minutes and 3 minutes with a breath hold in between.
Love it.
The longer journey.
I love the Joe Dispenza mixed with the breath.
Right? Yeah. I mean, there's a multitude of other things going on in a longer session, but that's kind of a simple version.
I live for those breath holds.
Breath holds are great.
That's my thing.
That's the still point.
Yeah. Love those breath holds.
That's a lot of the times when I have the most amount of insights coming through.
Me too. Yeah.
And that's, I don't know how much further you want to go into, but that's when your body's actually being flooded with oxygen.
Mm.
Most people don't realize that when you're breathing heavily for an extended period of time, you're raising oxygen, but your body has a certain level of oxygen to CO2 for you to absorb it. So when you're breathing heavily for a long time, you're spiking oxygen, but you're decreasing CO2. So you're actually decreasing the amount of oxygen that's being absorbed. When you do a breath hold, all of that free floating oxygen that's in your system, it starts to come back to that ratio, and then the oxygen's actually absorbed and pushed through. So that's kind of happening on a physiological level when you're actually doing the breath hold.
That's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the stillness. Also just, yeah, there's just so much richness in it. It's that activation and then that holding. And it's just so cool. The more you practice, the more you can really see how much your capacity can expand.
Absolutely.
Which I think plays a role in your life. Okay, so wrap this up. Let's end with the transition that you're in. If it's too personal, you don't have to go into it, but
I can go into it. Yeah,
just a little bit.
Yeah. The transition that I'm in right now, I would say it's actually a really beautiful process, but know, this business, Somatic Breathwork, and I wouldn't even call it a business. It's more of a movement. It grew so fast, so fast. And now we have over 1,000 practitioners worldwide. We have a team of like almost 15 people. It has, and it all, it started with me, you know, and just, and chose me to kind of come through in the beginning. And everything was sort of through my own personal brand. And, you know, I was Somatic Breathwork in a way. And now it's become its own entity. And it's and there's so many other people that are helping out and teaching, and they've chose it as like their life mission in a way. And so it's been a process of peeling my, like, who am I without Somatic Breathwork, right? Because it's been such a massive part of my life for the past, you know, fuck, my whole life. But for me, it's like, what is my relationship to it in a way? How do I, like, show up for it and continue and create in it? And also, it's also a child that has gone through infancy and now is an adult, and or not an adult, but probably more like a teenager that needs more space. And I'm trying to figure out, how do I relate to it in a way that's healthy and create with it, but also take care of myself and also go and explore different things. And for me, I definitely have an artist heart inside. I've been delving into music. Music is a big part of my life. I've been learning music production. I'm also in the process of writing a book. I mean, the transitional phase is it's pretty clear for me, like, but it's the process of unwinding my identity from the brand.
Yeah.
And it can be tough.
Yeah.
It can be tough, and I feel for a lot of people that have been in a similar situation.
Yeah, because you're coming into you without something that you've tied yourself to.
Yeah, it's like,
it's confronting.
I feel like a woman. I've just given birth. This child's growing up.
Yeah,
and then it's like I gotta kind of like let it go and let it stand on its own two feet. But I found so much. My mom has told me this multiple times that, you know, she found her greatest purpose in being a mother, and she struggles with purpose right now, finding purpose in her life. And, you know, she really went downhill after I kind of like left and started doing my own thing because she lost her purpose, which was that was being a mother.
Right.
And so I'm like trying to, it's a similar thing, kind of not to the extent, but with it, like, what is my purpose now?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll continue to show up for that movement and build and create and make sure it holds its integrity and continues in the right direction. And also, what's my next chapter look like? I'm curious and I'm exploring, and I know it's creative. It's probably got a lot to do with music and maybe speaking and art. We'll see.
You're really good at speaking.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You speak really, really well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've sat, and I know we talked a little bit about, we both lived in Sedona at one time, but I lived in Sedona for 2 years. And during that time, you know, Sedona is interesting because there's not a lot of distractions, really. Like, there's not a lot of things going on. I mean, there's beautiful land and nature, but it was a lot of alone time and a lot of just sitting and digesting all of the information and stuff that I had taken in for so long. Part of what I'm doing, you could look at it from a digestion perspective, is most of us listen to so many podcasts, or we went to school, or we take in so many books, or we're constantly taking in information. And in our world, we have so much information with our phone that we are probably emotionally or informationally or experientially obese, meaning that we actually haven't digested it,
100%.
Meaning that we haven't absorbed it, assimilated it, and excreted all the stuff that we don't need.
So I think a lot of us, there's so much more anxiety than there used to be.
Yeah.
There's so much information. And I mean, we already talked about this, but it's just getting you further from your body, your truth, you know, it's just...
We need to take in the information, figure out what's useful and what's not, and release the rest of it. And that is the death process, right? Yep. It's the process of digestion, absorption, what's helpful, and then excreting. And I think the time in Sedona for me was a digestion period of taking in all these different concepts and topics and complex things and trying to absorb it and assimilate it and distill it down to its most simplest form. And that really allowed me to like get a lot of this across verbally speaking, because I sat with it and just digested it. And like, how do I distill it to its purest essence?
Yeah. You speak it so well. It just really,
it's all up in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course. This was an honor.
Incredible.
I feel like we could keep going.
But we could. We'll do a part two.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. I'd love to do a part two.
Yeah.
There's more I'd love to ask.
There were so many rabbit holes we were going down.
Yeah. We should do a part two.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. It was an honor. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this conversation and if you like this podcast, it would mean the world to me if you gave it a rating and review. This just helps the podcast grow and flourish, and it truly means so much to me every time I hear from each and every one of you. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. And to stay in touch, you can follow me on Instagram at Kenzie Burke. That is the home to all of my endeavors. And then at Body Forward and bodyforward.com, all things Body Forward. Please stay tuned as there is much to come and much to launching, from new programs to an entirely new membership platform that is launching in this new year in spring. A modality that I have been creating that's been birthed out of pure necessity and that has been truly changing my life before my own eyes. And I'm so thrilled to bring this to the world and to bring this to you. And yeah, so keep your eyes peeled. March is the month. And yeah, stay in touch. I'll see you on the next episode.